Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the Sub-Zero voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
It's Baltic out there, mate. It is freezing. It is chapping.
It is chapping. Not a phrase that I would use, but it is freezing. It is not good conditions for a goalkeeper. Anyone listening in, anyone that's played in these conditions, which I appreciate you probably haven't over the last couple of weeks, unless you are a professional, of course, given the lockdown conditions, but numb hands and numb feet.
Numb feet is what I suppose Jurgen Klopp spoke about that, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago. Numb hands, cracked hands. Mm. We all suffer, I do certainly, from cracked hands, very gentle hands when I'm out in the cold. Is that, we always say we bring it back to goalkeeping. Is that an issue if you've got cracked hands?
Well, it's an issue for me because I look at your hands and they are suspiciously soft. You have your moisturiser sat there on the table at all times. Again, giving away the secrets here. You have the moisturiser sat there at all times, suspiciously soft. I do wonder whether you've done a day's work in your life. I would say that for a goalkeeper, yes, it can be an issue. It was for me. I was actually allergic to gloves. I'm sure I've said this many times on the podcast. So when it was cold and damp, my hands would crack. And what that meant was I couldn't fully open the hands. I couldn't stretch them out almost. So they were constantly in this like claw position, which was a bit of an issue for me. And I think as well, blood circulation. Again, every goalkeeper is different. But for me, by 60, 70 minutes in a lot of games when you're playing in freezing temperatures, most of the time, my feet were numb. My hands were numb. And of course, the last thing you want is a shot from 30 yards that you're trying to hold when you can barely feel your hands.
What's the coldest you've ever been? Can you remember?
I remember several games where I couldn't wait for the final whistle to go. I think there was one in particular. It might have been a JPT game away at Swindon, if I remember rightly. And it was one of those games that went to extra time back then. Then it went to penalties. And I just remember getting in the shower afterwards and staying in the shower for about 20 minutes. But to the point where when the warm water hits you, it isn't a nice sensation. You actually get like an ache.
Chilblains, I think that's called.
Is that what it's called?
I think so, yeah.
Well, there you go. You learn something every day, don't you, Matthew? Thank you for enlightening me. But I do remember that. Again, I'm sure you guys play in it. And this actually is a point where I think that goalkeepers that play in other countries, goalkeepers that play in Spain, for instance, I've got no doubt that when they come and play in England and they have that first season, they have that first winter. Of course, the winter in the likes of Italy, Spain, nowhere near as cold as it is in England. And I just think it's the most difficult conditions for a goalkeeper to play in.
Mm. Coldest I've been. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you're welcome.
To be fair. Thanks for that. Going up north, I always found that to be really cold. Wigan. Old Wigan ground, Springfield Park, I think it was, wasn't it? And Boundary Park at Oldham. I think that's the highest ground in the Football League. That was always really, really cold.
Yeah, I played there and they didn't have a stand, if I remember rightly, as well. So you really get the wind coming in. That's another thing as well, because, of course, when you're playing in a stadium that doesn't have the corners filled in, then you really feel the conditions that much more. Like I'm saying this, and obviously those that are playing on a park on a Sunday, you get all the conditions. You know, you get the bad pitch, you get the wind, the rain. But what you tend to find, as you go up the levels and you play on better pitches, bigger stadiums, you actually don't feel the conditions quite so much.
I'll actually tell you the coldest I've ever been was in the US. It was an MLS playoff game between Sporting Kansas and Houston Dynamos. It was absolutely freezing, the coldest I've ever been, where the fans, and you see this in NFL, don't you, where the fans actually take blankets with them to cover themselves over in the stands.
Mm. This was during your career at Kansas, right?
Indeed, yes, a top flight MLS footballer. Giles Barnes was playing, actually. Remember him? Derby.
I do remember the name, yeah. You've told me many times that you could have been a professional footballer, but you decided to be a journalist.
Let's move on from that one very quickly indeed. We've got plenty coming up from the Premier League, not so much from the EFL and the Championship, of course, because of the games that were postponed at the weekend, but plenty coming up. Before we get to that, Richard, of course, Patron of the Week.
Indeed, our patron of the week. Let's get the drum roll ready. This week, it is Joe Watkins. Joe, thank you very much, along with all the other patrons who do help support what we do. Again, it is hugely appreciated. If you do want to support what we do, Matthew, where do they go?
You just need to go to patreon.com/goalkeepersunion, Richard. You'll find many interviews on there, and one that we did recently with David Priest, who has done a few podcasts of late. So we just tried to focus instead on David Priest, the coach, more so than David Priest, the man on Twitter, as he's known to many. And on that note, we spoke about his current role as goalkeeper coach with Östersunds in Sweden, how he actually developed into a coach, and some of the core lessons that he's learnt along the way. And I think that we've experienced this of late, haven't we, Rich, where especially in a time where you can occasionally see coaches barking at each other a bit on social media, that the understanding that your way doesn't necessarily always have to be the only way. And David was quite big on that. He really wanted to get that message across. So here is a quick snippet from the man himself.
Balance. Everything's about balance. And it's something that's key in the way that I look at coaching. It's not about just doing one thing for one person or looking at things one way. It is about being adaptable. And that's one thing I've really learned. It's about being adaptable. In the coaching aspect, you know, sometimes I'll have three keepers. I know I'm on three keepers. I've designed my session, and then one of them's pulled out. So you've got to be adaptable. And that's in everything. I don't mean just in people's opinions, but in the way that you look at goalkeeping and the way that you look at things. Because before I went to Denmark, you're right, I had blinkers on. I thought that this is how I see football. And if I'm going to become a coach or a manager, this is how I'm going to do things. I went to Denmark and it just blew everything away. Especially when I had a year at Odense, goalkeeping coach there, Tom Sturrow. I didn't play at all that season. I was on the bench all year. They came second in the league, did fantastic. Arik Anoshko, first choice keeper, was brilliant that season. But I learned a hell of a lot. It was so worth going there, even though I didn't play, because of the training that I had under Tom Sturrow. And he was right up my street. At that, you know, at that point in my career, I was probably about 32. I was all about the details and the fine details he went into, especially in technical stuff. It just blew my mind. And I think that's something that I've carried on. And it's not about, especially with coaches on Twitter, where we're a bit sort of quick there, maybe not criticised, but it's kind of like, if it's not their way, then it's not the right way. But again, like I said, it's not, you know, not everybody is in the same situation. You know, we see a lot of sessions where, you know, there'll be coaches who have four goalkeepers to work with. They'll have an assistant or two assistants working with them. So you've got seven bodies there. You could do a million things with seven bodies, a million things. But the truth of it is, maybe it's only at the very top level, have you got that luxury of being able to build sessions with that many bodies? And I think sometimes when we see things with goalkeepers where they're doing drills, where it's just one goalkeeper, like a one-on-one, or maybe it's only two goalkeepers, where you're a little bit restricted to what you can do. That's probably more the reality of goalkeeping coaching for 99% of goalkeeping coaches. Yeah, I think there's room for everything. Over the years, I probably saw that I've been very critical of people, you know, oh, I definitely wouldn't do this. That's what, you know, you shouldn't do that. Well, like I said, with the YouTube stuff, okay, that's right for one person, that might be right for the other, that's the way they see it. And as long as they believe in their philosophy, then it's fine.
Yep, so that was David Preece. You can find that on patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. Good chat, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was indeed. It was actually quite nice to share a lot of ideas, because, of course, he is quite loud on Twitter and some very interesting opinions, very knowledgeable when it comes to everything and anything goalkeeping related. Someone who thinks outside the box, certainly an interview that I would encourage people to check out.
Good stuff. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion, hello@goalkeepersunion.net, or drop us a WhatsApp or a text or a voice note, 07503 673 020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Let's start bright, shall we, Richard?
Let's
start bright. Perhaps not the biggest talking point, maybe you could say, I suppose, of the weekend, but arguably the save of the weekend. West Brom face an almighty task if they are to stay in the Premier League. But if they do, that last kick of the game save from Sam Johnstone to deny Harry Maguire and Manchester United was something quite special.
It was phenomenal. I love the fact that we're starting on a positive note because there are a few talking points this weekend. In fact, there's several talking points this weekend. Once again, largely in regards to mistakes from goalkeepers, or moments that have been deemed as mistakes anyway. But certainly this is a positive note to start on, because what a save. You know, you think about what you would want, or what the dream moment would be for a goalkeeper. Now, ordinarily that might be, yes, saving the winning penalty in an FA Cup final, Champions League. I'll tell you what though, it doesn't get much bigger than last minute of a game against Manchester United to save your team, in this case, a point. And it was a superb save. Top corner, good spring, good power. It looks all the way that it's in. And it's only when you see the replay, it was such a fine fingertip to take it onto the post. And again, those are the margins. And certainly from Manchester United's point of view, a game that you feel if they had gone on and won might have given them again that kick to stay as close as they can to Man City, although obviously it's looking likely that City could run away with it now. But, you know, from West Brom's point of view, again, this could be one of those moments that is that turning point. And they've had a few up to now, and actually a few which have been, I suppose, courtesy of Sam Johnson, it's fair to say. But yeah, this again was one of those moments. Great moment for him. And you just hope for him and for West Brom, this does give them a springboard now.
Good save from Mason Greenwood as well earlier in the game. He was really good in the reverse fixture, wasn't he, at Old Trafford. It must just be something, a former Manchester United player. Mm. Listen, he's been consistently good pretty much all season, but something when playing against your former club just brings it out of you.
Yeah, this would have meant a lot to him. I think anybody that goes back to their former club, irrespective of whether it's Manchester United or whoever, you want to put on a good display. I can certainly speak from personal experience on that as well. And yeah, he did. He was solid again. I think that the two saves of note, the one with his foot showed good flexibility, set well, good decision to go with his foot as opposed to getting down and trying to make the save with his hand. And to touch on the save at the end, to go into a little bit more detail, the thing that I liked, again, good set position, gave himself plenty of time. I mean, it was a long way out, the header, it's fair to say, but it was an incredible header going right in the top corner. The angle of dive, I thought, was perfect. Very powerful. Shifted his way over to his left, really exploded up to his left. And look, it's a header that beats a lot of goalkeepers, certainly most goalkeepers, I would say. So for him to get up there, he showed really good explosive power. And to do that almost last kick of the game, fantastic moment for him.
Just quickly on David De Gea, made a good double save late on in the game from Mbaye Diagne. We had a tweet in from Ronolfo Trausti Poralsen, I hope I've got that pronunciation right, who says, "Hey lads, quick thought and question for the pod. I might need to take a better look, but for me, De Gea's stance and or shape for his amazing save versus West Bromwich Albion was pretty much the same as against Everton the other day. This is his go-to stance slash shape on one-on-ones, and it has worked for him over the years. The best strikers out there seem to know that and can therefore exploit it. Do you think De Gea needs to evolve or mix up his one-on-one technique or simply be braver sometimes? Love the pod. Keep up the good work. For us keeper fanatics, it's great."
Fantastic. Appreciate the kind words. Appreciate the correspondence. And I agree with what has been said there to a large extent, because I think in that situation, this was a perfect example when he gets within, say, 2 yards of the ball but can't smother, the technique that he does makes himself very big. You know, that long barrier that he produces makes himself very big. The beauty of this save was the speed at which he got up for the second ball. Because, again, it's the kind of thing you do in training countless times where you'll do a double save. You know, you make a save one side, up as quick as you can, and save the other side. And this was that. You made the save, get up. Can you get the second ball before they head it into an empty net? Which he did. Brilliant save. My question is on the smother. That was the question we had in regards to Everton. I think it's a slightly different situation. I think that he's that little bit closer to De Gea. I think it was Calvert-Lewin, wasn't it? That little bit closer to De Gea. And that's where I'd love to see him go in and crunch a 50-50. Go head first, or certainly chest first, body first, hands first, and see if he can get the ball at the same time as the striker. I just feel that there are times that maybe he will opt for that long barrier when you just feel that he could get there ahead of the striker. Again, I know that some will disagree with me on that, but I think in this situation, the technique was perfect. He was never going to smother. If he tried to smother, he gives away a penalty because they tap it past him and go down. So I think it was a perfect technique for this one. Yeah, I would just love to see him smother a little bit more.
Okay, moving on to Leicester 3, Liverpool 1. From one excellent save to another, Kasper Schmeichel with a spread to end all spreads in denying Roberto Firmino. It was offside, but who cares?
It was a dream. A dreamy spread. What spread could this be? I'm now starting to think of quality spreads that are out there. Do you have anything, Matthew?
Are you talking like sandwich spreads?
Sandwich spreads will do. What have you got? what would be your spread of choice?
Peanut butter, always.
This is the peanut butter of spreads then. Because This was the fact that, again, Schmeichel has his way of making himself so big. You know, we touch on it so often. And actually, this is where, you know, we're just talking about David De Gea. We talk about all these different goalkeepers. And one of the things I love is they've all got a different strategy when it comes to the spread. You know, you've got Kasper Schmeichel, who is now peanut butter, apparently, and you've got David De Gea, who is Branston Pickle. You know, there's not necessarily one that's better than the other. They're all slightly different. I do really admire Kasper Schmeichel, though, in the way in which the bravery he does show, because he will throw himself out at the striker. And it's so intimidating when you do that. The thing I loved about this is that first and foremost, he's made himself big, but it's also how firm he is when he does what he does, because the ball's hit his hand, more often than not, that would just kill the ball dead. And it might be they make the save, but it might just drop and then you allow someone to follow up. It was the tension, I guess, that he had in his body for it to hit his hand and rebound as far out as it did. That shows real strength in the arms, in the forearms, in the wrists. Yeah, fantastic save.
Yeah, very, very good save. And at the opposite end, Alisson. Now, everyone listening to this podcast always watches goalkeepers with attention. We know that, but you would think there was extra attention on Alisson at the King Power just because of what had happened in the previous game against Manchester City. Now, regardless of allegiance, if you love goalkeepers and you love goalkeeping, you were just egging him on. And we probably shouldn't need to. We'd probably say, I got this. Don't worry about it. I'm absolutely fine. But you were just hoping that the game would pass without major incident. And up to the 81st minute, you could argue it had. And then the goal from Jamie Vardy, the mix-up. We had a text in from Josh. Actually, I'll read this first before we get to you. This is what he said. Hey guys, love the podcast. I hear Rio Ferdinand used the word calamity to describe Alisson, and quite frankly, I'm annoyed. The defender is facing away from Alisson, and I highly doubt Alisson doesn't shout for that. If Alisson stays away and there's a one-on-one, he's to blame if it goes in. If he does what he did, he's to blame. Not that the defender was in the wrong as such, but it's not a calamity.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair analysis of what's happened. And there's a lot that I want to speak about on this one, because I think, first and foremost, it is just a mix-up. As you say, if the defender leaves it, Alisson's decision's fine. And then we're talking about how well he's read the game, come out and volleyed it 30 yards out, i.e. Kasper Schmeichel. Do you know what? We were talking about him a couple of weeks ago, that header, that which is quite a famous header now, because he was a good 40 yards out. And we were saying how good that was. Well, could you imagine if he did that and one of his centre-backs didn't know he was coming and challenged him? They had a mix-up and someone puts it in an empty net. Of course, we're then questioning Kasper Schmeichel. So one of the key things for me here is that combination. The combination of your goalkeeper and your two centre-backs, or three centre-backs, I think is key. And of course, that has been disrupted quite heavily this season at Liverpool. So I think that's part of it. I think in terms of where Alisson's at, and I've got to be careful on this because, again, we're not Alisson, so we don't know how he's feeling right now. He might be as motivated as ever, but something I would say, and this is, again, based on personal experience, something that I went through as a goalkeeper, where your mindset can shift ever so slightly, and it can happen for different reasons. It can happen sometimes for positive reasons, sometimes for negative reasons. I do wonder when I look at, and actually it's not just Alisson, this is probably more the Liverpool team in general. They've won the Champions League. They've won the Premier League. You go again, you go again, you go again. What's the next goal that you've set yourself? And when you look at what's happened this season, yeah, they've had a few setbacks, a few things that haven't gone their way, injuries, etc. But there is a slightly different feel about the team. And even when I look at Alisson, there is a slightly different feel. And as basic as this may sound, I do wonder where his mind is in terms of his motivation. Is it as high as it was last season, season before? Now, this isn't necessarily something that's a conscious thing where he's thinking, like, I'm not going to try, because I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that once your mind shifts ever slightly, you might come off it 1%, 2%. You might not even realize that you've done it, but suddenly things just start to shift. And once that tide turns, it can be so difficult to turn back. And the reason I say that is based on personal experience. I had it at Watford. And in fact, it was pretty much the end of my Watford career, where so driven the whole time. Then all of a sudden, something shifted ever so slightly. And I had the oddest run of games where I had a couple of absolute worldies making fantastic saves. In fact, it was when I saved the two penalties in a game. And then the next one, I saved another penalty and man of the match. Then all of a sudden, I had four of the worst games of my life. And when something shifts and you're maybe not quite in the same mental state as he has been perhaps over the last couple of seasons, it's then, for me anyway, personally, it was quite difficult to shift back and to become that consistent, driven performer that we've seen, certainly in Alisson, week in, week out. You've also then got the fact that people seem to remember mistakes much more than they remember great saves. So that's the other bit, is that it is going to take a period of time now for him just to come through smoothly, for Liverpool to improve, for us to suddenly, or not us necessarily because we do it in a different way, but for people to talk about Alisson in the same way and they did 2 weeks ago. It's a really, really fascinating time for me watching him, watching his body language, watching his expression after that goal goes in the same way that I was watching his expression after the Man City goal goes in. Yeah, he's got a fascinating time ahead of him. I've got no doubt he will bounce back. It's just how quickly he bounces back.
Winning the Premier League and the Champions League is a tremendous achievement, absolutely. Mm. But that's, I mean, that's not enough, right? I mean, that's why the elite are the elite. That's why Tom Brady is a seven-time Super Bowl winner. It's why Usain Bolt won numerous golds. It's why Ryan Giggs is the most decorated footballer in the Premier League. It's why Ronaldo and Messi have all the accolades that they have. You've got to keep going, right? That's why you are an elite sportsman. So I'm not saying that you're questioning Alisson's motivation. You're not doing that. You're just suggesting a slight...
I'm just suggesting that... Yeah, I just think when I look at the Liverpool team, what are they, 30-odd points worse off than they were this time last year? Something has shifted. Now, people can say injuries, people can say... But for me, I think also when a culture shifts ever so slightly, it can impact those around you. There's all sorts of different psychological cliches that I could throw out now, that you become the sum of those around you, et cetera, et cetera. I just think that something has shifted there. And look, this is what I'm saying. I don't think it's a conscious thing. That's what I want to make the point. I don't think it's a conscious thing with Alisson. But something for me, just watching him, given how solid, secure his decisions have been, fantastic, I feel, up to this point. But it just, he just looks a bit different. Now, look, I hope I'm way off. There's a reason I put that tweet out last week, and it was along the lines of, I hope that the narrative doesn't change, because I still look at him, and I'm still looking at him as one of the world's best. He's still in the top few in the world for me. It's just that he wouldn't have to see this as the challenge that it is, I feel, and almost press reset and go again and set new targets, set new goals. Because that's the other thing as well. Like, Klopp's effectively now said they're not going to win the Premier League. Even that in itself... You think what that could have to the mentality of a player, or the moment that you feel that, oh, maybe we're not going to do it this season, suddenly that mentality shifts ever so slightly. Last season, it was about winning the Premier League. Hadn't done it for however many years. Of course, they're so driven every game. They've got one goal. They're going to hit that goal. They hit that goal. Then you've got this random time that we're living in. Then you've got a key centre-back gets a very bad injury. Then you have a couple of surprise defeats. Then you have a massive defeat to Aston Villa. Then you have, you know, and all of a sudden, these things start to build up. And I just wonder whether that's just ever so slightly chipped away. Look, I've got no doubt that we'll be sat here in a few months talking about how Alisson has gone once again and gone above and beyond where he was before. But this at the moment is a crucial time for him.
Yeah, I think he'll bounce back. Absolutely no question about it. And Jurgen Klopp, after the game, alluded to the fact that he didn't hear a shout, didn't he? He said that he'd had a really good game, but maybe there was a hit of confidence because of what happened last time. But the fact that he didn't hear a shout from where he was standing, and the fact that it was the first time that the two had played together, Alisson and Kabak. We've got a few tweets on that, so I'll quickly read those out. But before we do, there was a moment where he could have picked it up and he launched it straight after that incident for the second goal. That looked a little bit odd. Then he flicked one up on the outside of his boot and half volleyed it out incredibly casually, like we spoke about in the last podcast. And he also made that brilliant double save, first from Harvey Barnes and then from Jamie Vardy. So some of the tweets that we had in were just in response to whether he had had a good game or what people thought of his performance. Straudinho says, I love watching Liverpool lose, but how can we blame Alisson there and not Kabak? Surely he heard the shout to get out of the way. FT Keeper says, I think he played good. First goal, can't do much about it because you have four players in your face. Don't know where the ball's going to go. Second, I think it was more on Kabak because he didn't move away, but it's questionable. Third goal, nothing he could do, really. Unreal double save too. Spursy Lad says, made one of the saves of the season, but then was really poor for the second goal. First and third goal, can't do much about. Some days he might save one of them, but not errors for sure. Alan Scholes, he did great till he made the decision to come way out of the box and tried to clear that attempted through ball when clearly his defender had it under control. Then after that, the defence lost confidence in him, and that resulted in at least one more. Matthew Jones, mixed bag, showed the best and Roxeter he has to offer. I think that might be worst, right, but there's been a typo in there somewhere.
Spell check doing
autocorrect. Just a confidence thing whilst having to play with makeshift defence in front of him. Have no doubt he will be back to his best when he has a proper defence in front of him. And finally, the celery tickle says, not his fault for the second goal. If the defender gets a call, it's the goalkeeper's all day long and he gets their way before any attacker. No wonder goalkeeper's confidence takes a hit when he'll end up getting the blame for a defender ignoring his call.
Yeah, look, again, all great tweets in. Once again, appreciate it greatly. And look, and I say all that, and I must caveat that with the fact that, again, we haven't actually touched on, you know, in too much detail as to what happened, because look, I agree with a lot of what's said there, that actually, if the defender does hear the shout, and if the defender, you have that relationship, he leaves it, Alisson clears it, they probably draw the game 1-1, and we're talking about how well he's bounced back, especially if you throw in that double save as well, then we're saying, look, fantastic performance. But again, these are the fine margins. And I think as well, where I'm quite careful not to generalise, when we're talking about these performances, it's not like he's been poor throughout both games. It's not like all of his kicks are going out of play and his decision making's all over the place. We're talking about three or four moments. That's all we're talking, like seconds, not minutes, not two full games. We're talking about four or five three or four key moments in games that haven't gone his way, and he's been punished fully for every single one. And what I would say is that for goalkeepers throughout the land, of course, during each game, you're probably going to have three or four moments a game. Now, you might get away with them every week for week after week after week, but at some point, you'll have that game when you get punished. And he's just gone through a little bit of a spell, it feels like, where he has been punished for those small errors.
Played 120 plus games for Liverpool So this is, you know, except what a handful of games that maybe we could think about where he's not been at the top level.
That's the other thing. And I talk about this with a lot of the lads that I work with, is in a perfect world, you make three mistakes a season, but you spread them out. You do one every 15 games and then you end up getting player of the year. Do you know, if you make those three mistakes, three games running, you get dropped. But I think there's that as well. We've got to appreciate that you don't know when the mistakes are coming. No one's perfect. We always make small errors in every game that we play. You're unfortunate when they happen in a glut, because that's what then draws attention to you. And of course, shaking that tag, you're going to have a long run of games before they're forgotten. And it just feels for Alisson at the moment that he's just had that little glut. And for him now, it's an important time.
Okay, from one Brazilian goalkeeper to another, Manchester City 3, Tottenham 0. Is Edison any good, by the way? Any good?
I mean, he's okay. I think he's settled in well. I think he's, you know, a little bit of work needs to be done. I think certainly on playing out, ideally that ball kind of in behind, if he can just work on that a bit, probably needs to do a little bit in the gym, work on those leg muscles, because I think from one step, you know, he's only hitting at 75 yards. He wants to be up near the 80, 85 yard mark, really.
Incredible, wasn't it?
It's a joke. It's a joke. I've watched it so many times, and as much as it did get quite a bit of credit on a few of the different TV channels, I wanted it to get more because it's one step. It's one step, and it's a cannon. I've never seen anybody be able to strike the ball so pure and such an incredible trajectory. It was just phenomenal. And again, the understanding, the game understanding, where he'll play out all day and he'll play into midfield, into his fullbacks, wingers. But then every now and then, just to produce that, he did it against Huddersfield, didn't he, a couple of years back, and Aguero scored in that one. And this, it's the same thing, where it's just an absolute bomb. And fantastic finish, don't get me wrong. But to have the ability to do that and the awareness to do it and when to do it, phenomenal.
Hugo Lloris. Also in that game. Now, we spoke about him extensively in the last podcast, and he was the subject of a semi-commentary corner in this game. Jamie Carragher laid into him, unfairly so, I think. This was after the second goal conceded from Ilkay Gundogan. Hugo Lloris, who was awful midweek, said Carragher, hasn't been much better today. Should have saved the penalty, should save that as well. Just toe pokes it, really. He's just not strong enough to keep it out. Very reminiscent of his performance midweek. He's referring to Everton. Not been a great few days for the goalkeeper. Jamie Redknapp also said he's having a nightmare at the moment.
The power of the pundit. I think that, look, it's one of those days where all three goals he's got a touch on. So can they be saved? Yes, they can. Are they errors? It's one of them again for me. We just got to be so, so careful to start blaming a goalkeeper for a penalty, for instance. You know, he needs to keep that out. Well,
but you know what? Actually, this is an interesting... Sorry to interrupt. This was an interesting point, because afterwards, Jamie Carragher, when he was mulling things over in his head as the game was going on, he did say it's always interesting on a penalty. Always feel you can't have a go at a goalkeeper for not saving it. But if that was in free play, you'd say he has to save it. Big mistake. With a penalty, we're always a bit reluctant to point a finger at the goalkeeper and say he should have saved it.
We are, because, again, you're not in control of that much. And look, the bit for me in the, can he save it? Yes, he can. The reason he doesn't is that on a penalty, what tends to happen is you dive a certain way. Now, it's very rare that it falls perfectly where you're diving and you know, the classic cliche, good height for a keeper, and you're able just to parry it around the post. Like, it's very, very rare that that happens. What ends up happening is you dive, the ball goes wherever it goes, and you're then trying to figure out a way in order to save it. It might be that it's back on your feet and you're trying to then almost volley it away, or it's a knee and it goes over the bar, or it's an elbow, David Seaman-esque against Scotland back in the day, or it comes off your face or what have you. Now, in this situation, he's gone to his right. It's gone down low. So he's obviously got his hand down very quickly. The frustration for him was that he wasn't quite able to get a full hand, and the angle of the hand arguably wasn't quite as it needed to be. But do bear in mind, this all happens in a split second. It's not like he's got seconds to think about this and to adjust his body and to get himself in the perfect shape. It's a split second. It wasn't a great penalty. He's gone full stretch to his right. Another day, he gets a good hand to it and it goes around the post. He was just ever so slightly unfortunate that he wasn't quite able to get his hand positioned as he wanted at the moment when the ball's hit him.
But should he save it?
No, again, I don't think you can ever say with a penalty that he should save it. Again, I think it's dangerous territory. And I think that what is now happening is that the expectation of the goalkeeper is getting higher and higher and higher. You know, even the Martinez saves, which I know we're going to touch on very shortly, not really getting the credit they deserve. Because again, certain saves, because we see them so often, they're almost becoming the norm. But that doesn't mean they're not exceptional. Just because we're seeing that type of save over and over and over again doesn't mean we shouldn't give it credit over and over and over again. In the same way that David De Gea's top hand save that we touch on so often has almost just become, oh, that's another David De Gea save. No, it's still a fantastic save. We still need to credit it as so, because otherwise we are going to get to the point where it's going to be almost impossible for one of these pundits to give credit to a goalkeeper.
Good points. Well made, Richard. As always, you spoke about Emi Martinez there. He was on song yet again. Oh, he made nine saves in Villa's draw with Brighton. A personal best for him. He's never made more than that in the Premier League.
No, superb. Very, very good. And I think we like to name check goalkeeper coaches as well from time to time. And certainly Neil Cutler, you've got to give a bit of credit to. Never easy when you bring in a goalkeeper worth, or when you spend the amount of money that they do, of course, it comes additional pressure. You know, talks about Kepa, Mendy, whoever else who's been brought into the Premier League. Of course, there is a bit more of a spotlight. And especially for someone like Martinez, where, like we touched on it with Alisson before, in that he's had a lot of success previously and in such a short period of time. So to then come and carry that on, huge credit to him. And just the more I watch him, he looks so in control, powerful. His body language is fantastic. He's becoming more of a leader as well, it looks like. Certainly the reaction at the end of the game here as well said to me that he is becoming a bigger character week in, week out in that dressing room. And no, look, in this game, I thought he was superb. I think we could touch on several of the saves, very different saves that he's making. But again, there was one in particular, I think it was full stretch to his right from memory, where just the explosive power, and you look at him, he's a big guy, you know, he's well built. And the way in which he moved across and exploded to the top right, really, really sharp, really impressive.
That bit at the end of the game that you're referring to, I thought that was really interesting. Firstly, you can see the really strong relationship between him and Neil Cutler. But the fact that the camera was on Martinez straight after the final whistle and he was shaking his head, he wasn't happy. He then did the interview after the game and they said, happy with the point, pleased with that, considering you were under pressure for quite a bit of the game. He said, no, I thought we were sloppy. We should have got more. We want to get into that top six. We should have got more than just a point. And I thought that that showed a bit of a shift in his mentality. I could be wrong here, but it almost exhibited a bit of arrogance that perhaps we may not have seen. I mean, it's almost like he's earned that now. He feels like he's warranted the ability to be able to speak like that in front of the cameras, whereas if you'd done that to him in his first couple of games at Arsenal, I doubt he would have spoken in the same way.
It's a fair point. You almost would have wanted him to have spoke like that regardless. That's the mentality that in a perfect world, if you were going to build a goalkeeper, a player, they would have that mentality. And the problem is there's arguably, even in the Premier League, there's still not enough that have that. You know, I think a lot, you'll set goals. I mean, we, you know, I could give examples from personal experience where you set goals often at the start of the season. You try and be as realistic as possible, but at the same time, be as positive as possible. And I think when he's now looking at it, given some of the results they've had this season, he's got in his mind, we want to finish top six. The argument might be, do the entire Aston Villa squad have that in their mind, given that they're so much better now than they were last season? And again, I don't know this because I'm not every Aston Villa player, but of course, it could be as simple as that he's got that mentality of we will finish in the top six, whereas another squad member might be, well, look, if we finish top half, that's a massive improvement on next season. And of course, if you've got that difference within the squad, you'll naturally always fall in line with the lowest common denominator, basically. So you'll end up finishing 10th or 11th or what have you. And in fairness to Martinez, if that's where his mentality is, I certainly think they've got a fantastic chance of finishing top six. And certainly with him in goal doing what he's doing, gives them an even better chance.
Okay, well, we kept commentary corner away from the City Spurs game, but we are going to quickly throw it in here. Commentary corner. So this was Graeme Souness and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank while watching the Arsenal-Leeds game yesterday, and Ian Melier, primarily for the penalty that he gave away after receiving a pass back and getting caught out by Bukayo Saka, I think it was. Graeme Souness said, Perfect back pass, right weight. He's not spun it at him. Perfect pass to give him enough time to take a touch and launch it. Now, I accept a goalkeeper nowadays, it's never been more difficult because they're expected to pick passes now rather than get it up the other end of the pitch. When you look at this game in the first half, all three goals, the goalkeeper has had a part to play. We were talking about the importance of having a good goalkeeper before. This guy's cost them three goals.
Yeah, look, I don't agree, naturally. I think that the second one, we'll touch on that and then we'll touch on the other two. I think that it's tough. And I mean, we're talking between us and potentially going to do an article on this because the amount of goals that you see where a goalkeeper is now giving the ball away or getting tackled and it's resulting in a goal has become more and more. If this happens 15 years ago, it's on Danny Baker's Own Goals and Gaffes, for those that remember those good old VHS.
A bit more than 15 years ago, I think.
Well,
mate.
A little bit more, wasn't it?
Probably want to say about 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, it makes me feel old. But it was, though, this kind of mistake will be on that kind of video, whereas now you'll see two or three every weekend. And again, it's because of the way in which these teams want to play. Now, I'm probably repeating a point that I said a few weeks ago. I do think there needs to be a trigger in a goalkeeper's mind where the moment it gets that little bit too risky, that you just, even if it's an old school toe punt, you just get it 50 yards away, wherever it needs to go, and then you shout at the defenders or the midfielders for not making an angle and do that. Whereas it feels that goalkeepers are taking more and more and more risks and waiting until the last possible second. And here, you know, he hasn't done himself a favour with his touch. When he's tried to bring it back inside, it wasn't the best touch. And of course, in the end, brings him down for the penalty. So it's not great.
That's why I actually don't think that it was the perfect back pass.
No,
yes, he did roll it into
pass,
him, but Meslier is left-footed.
Yeah.
So it wasn't rolled to his left foot where he could have just hit it first time. Mm. He actually brought it back from his right foot onto his left foot, which then he dallied. And yes, he made the error thereafter. But it wasn't the perfect back pass because it wasn't on his left foot.
No, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that. And the bit we can't see with the camera angles we're given is what options he had. My guess is it was none. And then, again, it's all happening in a split second. At some point, do you make the decision to kick it? Even that, where do you kick it? Do you kick it down the middle? Do you kick it out wide? Do you just get rid? Doesn't matter where. Look, I would always say that I just think that you do need to have that trigger. And I'm going to go back to that point. I do think that that is key. But at the same time, because we're seeing it as much as we are, and I'm sure if you ask Bielsa, would you rather the goalkeeper just boots it long whenever he's under pressure, but it means you're going to keep possession 100 times less this season? No, he'd rather have one mistake like that and keep possession of the ball 100 times and build attack after attack. In terms of the other two, and I think we've got to be a little bit careful because I think the third... It's just because of the angle. It's just because of the fact that it's gone in, again, use a cliche, it's gone in the near post. Look, if this is struck centrally and someone strikes a shot from 6 yards out and it's gone in down by the goalkeeper's feet, we're not questioning it because it's struck so hard and sometimes it's the hardest place to move your feet so quickly and try and make the save. It's only the fact that it's on the angle that it's then questioned and it looks not so good. But I'll tell you what, if that's central and it goes in, no one says anything. Because to move your feet at that speed when you're only 6 yards out and he's hit it as hard as he has, very, very difficult. Now, the first, once he's come inside, the goalkeeper's taken up a true position. Meslier's taken up a true position. The bit that we can't actually see, and I do question, is whether it's taken a little nick. And the reason we can't see it is that it just so happens on the replay, the referee is in the way. So you can't see if it's just taken a nick off a defender. If it does, then absolutely no chance. If it hasn't, the argument might be that he might be half a yard too far over as he started to move over. Or maybe he started to read it that ordinarily they go far post. But again, it's hard to fully analyze given that we don't know whether it took that nick or not.
Which is exactly what Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang said after the game as well. They spoke about, and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank elaborated on that, the psychological battle between goalkeeper and striker. Now, maybe Meslier was expecting him to do the classic Thierry Henry, bend it round the other side. But Aubameyang said after the game, no, I actually did that on purpose to fool the goalkeeper.
Yeah, and I think, look, we've all been beaten by that shot. Of course, when they come in like that and take a snapshot and it goes through legs, you don't see it till that little bit later. So it will beat a lot of goalkeepers. Also, they'll say near post again. But the truth is, once you get that central, I would always argue there's not necessarily a near or a far. So wherever it beats you, it beats you. You know, I think Kasper Schmeichel made the comment about that, about being beaten at the near post anyway. Like, if you're taking up a true position, you are going to get beaten on that side from time to time. You could take up a false position and get beaten very easily the other side. And you know what? You might escape blame from certain pundits, but that's when the likes of us might pick up on that and see that you are over-covering in order to avoid certain criticism that you might get from the masses, but you're not being the most effective that you can be.
Richard, deep breath, please.
It is time for the championship rundown. Okay, we start at Ewood Park and it was Blackburn 1, Preston 2. This was on the Friday night. Really good performance from Dan Everson. It has to be said, he's gone in there getting a lot of plaudits from the Preston fans. Seen a lot of articles actually recently speaking about just how well he's done, and he was excellent again here. Made a very good save down to his right. Really sharp save, which in the end helped them to a 2-1 victory. We move into Saturday. There was nearly a full list of fixtures. Just a couple of postponements. Rotherham QPR, Sheffield Wednesday, Swansea both fell foul of the weather, but all the rest were on. Nottingham Forest drawing 0-0 with Bournemouth. Birmingham 0, Luton 1. Couple of good saves here from Neil Etheridge. Unfortunately, one did fall to Dan Potts, who got the winner for Luton. Birmingham in all sorts of problems at the moment down the bottom of the championship. Cardiff beating Coventry 3-1. Dylan Phillips keeping his place in goal for Cardiff. Derby beat Middlesbrough 2-1. Huddersfield 2, Wickham 3. A very good save from Schofield. A good tip over the bar here. They actually had a little bit of banter over commentary on this because Chris Kamara was doing the game and I know Matt Murray was doing another game. And because Matt Murray will always talk about the goalkeepers whenever he does a report anywhere, Chris Kamara was making a little bit of fun, saying that it was a reasonably comfortable save for Schofield. But no doubt Matt Murray would have said it was a fantastic save. And in my opinion, Matt Murray would have been right because it was a very, very good save. Norwich beat Stoke 4-1. Reading 1, Millwall 2. An interesting moment for Bierkowski, which we're going to touch on very shortly. A throw. Did make a very good save in this game as well, though. Down low to his left. Ball was played through. Got himself into a good position. Set about 8 yards out. Gave himself enough time to react to the shot and decided to go with his hand. Down low to his left. Good firm hand. Was going in the bottom corner, but he was able to divert it wide of the post. And in the final game, not such a good day for Bristol City, although Dan Bentley couldn't do a lot in a 6-0 defeat against Watford. Another clean sheet for Dan Backman. Of course, Ben Foster still not fit for Watford. And moving on to Sunday, it was Brentford 0, Barnsley 2. Credit here to Bradley Collins. Made a couple of good saves in this one. Actually, one in the second half was a scoop. Ball coming from distance. Wasn't able to gather it at the first attempt, but showed a lot of bravery to get himself out on the second attempt and get the ball away to safety. And a huge clean sheet this one. I don't think many people predicted a 2-0 win here for Barnsley. So credit to him, credit to them.
Top stuff, Richard. Just one to refocus on there. Bart Bielkowski, you said, caught napping against Reading. Or was he? Did Alpha Semedo mean to shoot from, what, 40, 50 yards?
Yeah, there's nothing he can do for me. It's a good throw out. It was a bit of a poor touch from the lad that he threw it to. I think it's meant as a shot. You don't, do you? You think it's a tackle from
Semedo. I think
Semedo.
He went in to not crunch him, just go in and go in hard and just get the ball cleanly. And it's just inadvertently, wonderfully curled into the goal.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think this is very quick thinking, given that Bierkowski was slightly out of position, given where he threw it from. And in the end, it is a brilliant finish. And of course, Bierkowski tries to get himself back towards the goal, but just can't get there in time. It's quite agonising. But certainly for me, no fault of the goalkeeper.
Okay, best of the rest from the EFL.
Let's do it.
Lee Burge, hero of the day for Sunderland in their 4-1 win over Doncaster. An own goal, yes, but two penalty saves. The boot of Burge, first in high John Taylor, and then Jason Locailo. Not the best penalty, has to be said, but still needed to be saved.
He joins an exclusive club, doesn't he, Matthew?
I knew it was coming.
But no, two very good saves. And you felt for him, of course, had the own goal as well. One of those horrible moments where you got absolutely no chance. Hits the post, hits the goalkeeper, goes in the goal. But credit to him, two penalty saves. And the first one in particular, which was struck very, very hard, reacted well. I think it was with his knee or his leg in order to get it up, away and to safety. And a very big win for Sunderland.
Yep, Matt Ingram back in for Hull. A very good stop back across himself from Will Grigg in their defeat to MK Dons.
Big win for MK Dons. But this was an excellent save. He's moved right across the goal. So it's a cross from his right-hand side. Came fully across the goal, got himself set, and that was key because the header's gone back across him and it was the way in which he was set. He was able to then move his weight very quickly back to his top right and get a good hand round the post. And at the other end, good clean sheet again for Andy Fisher, continuing his qualifying form, nearly got done when he's tried to play out, play to the left winger. And the way in which MK play, he's often dribbling the ball 30, 40 yards out. So at times he can be left exposed if, of course, you do give away the ball. That happened here. Shot from the halfway line, brilliant shot, has to be said. Just fired in towards goal. Andy Fisher completely in no man's land, and it ends up hitting the side netting. But he did make a very good save thereafter, up top left towards the end of the game. Set well, very powerful. Two hands, fingertips over the bar. Great save.
Alex Cairns also with another solid double save to deny Luke Jeffcott of Plymouth. They actually lost that game, and as did Northampton to Burton. Jonathan Mitchell picking up a back pass in the Cobblers' defeat to the Brewers. Michael Bostwick scored the indirect free kick, and it's one of those where I think Northampton had everybody on the goal line, but Bostwick has just somehow managed to find the smallest gap.
I wonder, and again, I'd love to know your thoughts, or you guys, what you think of this in terms of free kicks that are in the box. When a goalkeeper picks up a back pass, it was only about 7 or 8 yards out, the shot was. And it's the fact that everybody's run towards the ball, but they've all jumped and turned their back. So at that moment, there are now a few gaps that the striker can hit. In some ways, does it make more sense just to stand firm? Just to be really brave and stand firm. It's the fact they've all run and jumped and turned their backs that's created the gap.
That would be great to watch. So it's teed off, the indirect free kick, and then they just all stay there.
Just stay on the line. Just so strong. You know it's going to hit one of them and they're going to be really hurt, no doubt. But yeah, if they just stand firm, I don't know. I just wonder what would give you a better chance probability-wise. Because for this, it must have been so frustrating. Again, goalkeeper's taken the position where he's on the front line and tried to run out in order to spread as well. But the fact they all ran, jump, and they all turned as they jumped, that was the bit that frustrated me. I guess in a perfect world, you would just run out and you wouldn't jump. You would just run and expect or accept that it might hit you and it might hurt you.
Interesting. Maybe we'll see that one. Perhaps the goalkeeper is the charger and everybody else stays
put. Did you think it was a back pass, by the way?
Yes.
Did you?
Yeah. Mm. I think a lot of back passes get away with it, to be honest. I sometimes think when a cross comes in and a defender intercepts the cross and it trickles back to the goalkeeper who then picks it up, I would argue that is a form of a back pass.
Mm. Okay. We can agree to disagree.
That we can. Jack Bonham, a decent tip over from Charlton's Darren Prattley in Gillingham's win at the Valley. And Jamie Jones of Wigan, a save of the weekend contender in tipping over from Oxford's Mark Sykes. It wasn't enough. Oxford did win the game 2-1.
Yeah, excellent from Jamie Jones. Was a fantastic save. Showed a lot of agility, power to get up to it and get fingertips over the bar. And Jack Bonham, one of the lads that I work with, so I do keep a close eye on Jack. And I went through his clips this morning and I thought it was a fantastic display. Never easy to go to the Valley, get a victory, but several good saves. Read the game well, coming for crosses, good punches, distributed well. Just a real solid all-round performance from Jack, who's having another excellent season.
One more in League One. Alex Palmer hammering the ball at Dion Charles in Lincoln's draw with Accrington. You spoke about playing from the back earlier. This is a fine example of that.
That's another example. And a goalkeeper, by the way, who's having a brilliant season, has to be said. Obviously on loan from West Brom, and Lincoln very much flying high. But it's one of those, as soon as he's taken his touch, he's had a look and realised there's not a great deal on. He's trying to force the pass and obviously doesn't quite connect with it, isn't able to clip it in the way that he wants, and has almost duck hooked it, I would say. And obviously it's gone straight to the opposition and they've ended up putting it in the back of the net. But once again, hence why we will likely write an article on this exact subject. I'm sure it's one where they're not necessarily going to change their style, because it's worked very well for Michael Appleton and Lincoln so far.
And finally, not many games in League Two, but one very small talking point. Matt Jilks still going strong, only really called into action once against Stevenage, but it was key in a 1-0 win. Jack Aitchison denied. Richard, I think we can now move over to this.
Clean Sheet Club. Indeed, it is that time. Do you know what, Matthew? I am quite the keen golfer, it has to be said. And certainly when it comes to my game, I'm not great when it's chipping and putting, not particularly good at driving. I'm always pretty good around the 150 mark, which I would normally use an 8-iron. That was my favourite club. Not anymore. It is time for Clean Sheet Club. We start with Nick Pope, a 3rd in 9 for the England number 2. Edison, 7 in 8 for him, going strong. Robert Sanchez, 5 in 6. Emi Martinez, 2 on the bounce. Alphonse Areola, also 2 on the bounce and 3 in 5. Bree Samba, you'll never believe it, 2 on the bounce and 3 in 4. Asmir Begovic, guess what? 2 from 2 in all competitions. Simon Sluger, 1st in a month. Daniel Backman, it's back. Backman's back. two back-to-back and 5-7. Andrew Fisher, 50-50, 2-4. Ben Garrett, this week's favourite, 2's up. Mike Cooper, against all the odds, it's 2 on the spin. Matt Jilks, 2-3. This sounds something like Top of the Pops, by the way. I know you've written it, so it sounds like that. Callum Burton, same again, 2-3. Mark Oxley, fate finishes us off with Southend's ever-present captain and stopper. You know what's coming. Double bubble, 2 on the spin, a pair of clean sheets in successive meets. Oh my God. I just have to make a point that I don't write this. I read it, and I read it in the way that I do, but I'm cringing as I'm reading it. Please know that.
You were obviously asked about this last time, so we just thought we'd ham it up a little bit. But so many goalkeepers with 2 on the bounce this week, Richard.
Indeed.
Over to the table. Freddie Woodman still out there on top with 15 from 26 games. Edison has moved up into second spot with 14 from 22 games. Alex Palmer in third spot with 13 from 27. And Emi Martinez moving up into the top 5 for the first time since we started. Like we said, we weren't going to do Premier League goalkeepers, but they're just too good to ignore. So in joint 4th/5th, you've got Emi Martinez on 12 in 22. Josh Griffiths also on 12 in 25. And then Vaclav Hladký and Rafa Cabral also on 12 in 26 and 29 respectively. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keepers
away!